Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break. And best to you.
With our man Sean Cunningham, who is out in the wilderness. He grabbed his laptop, went to a Starbucks in Placerville while on a camping trip. Sean, I have now, moving forward, referring to you as the godfather of sports media in Sacramento. We've also determined that you are just the GOAT. I know you don't believe that. I know you called me delusional last night. You are the best to do it in this market when it comes to covering sports. So those are your titles moving forward. You may accept them or you may not, but that's how we will be referring to you from now on.
It may be a delusional compliment, but it's a compliment nonetheless. So to have someone like you say that, it means a lot. And I'm not worthy of such praise, but I'll take it.
Oh, you very much are. And speaking of delusional, let's talk Summer League. Because there's a lot of us that are delusional right now as the Sacramento Kings are headed into the semifinals of the Summer League against the Toronto Raptors tomorrow afternoon. You are notoriously the most level-headed guy who covers this basketball team. You have covered this team through the good and the bad, through 1140 to KCRA and everywhere in between, but you have always covered them with a very level head. There are a lot of Kings fans excited about these two young players that we've been watching for the last week or so, Neek Clifford and Maxime Renault. What is your impression of these guys at first glance?
I think I'm a bigger – I said this even on draft day. I think I'm probably a bigger fan of them as people than I am as them as athletes, because we're still learning about them as athletes. I've spent a lot of time – over these past few weeks getting to know them as people, be it directly with those people, with them themselves, their families, their coaches, people who have been along the ride, their agents. And there's not much that you're going to find that you're not going to like about these two guys in particular, Neek Clifford and Maxime Renault. And it's very infectious personality. So you can see that box being checked right off the bat. And then, course, on the basketball side, I mean, I was honestly don't spend a whole lot of time watching Colorado State basketball. Stanford didn't really give you much reason to watch over these past few years. So getting a kind of familiar with some of the things that they did at the collegiate level doesn't always let you know how they're going to translate to the NBA level, but cautious optimism with what they're bringing to the table. I mean, Summer League is haphazard basketball. So for people who to get excited about it, your fans, do that. Please get excited over it. But keep in mind, like, all I'm looking for when I watch a guy play, I'm not looking for points scored. I'm looking at confidence. Do they look like they belong? Do they have a command? Do they have a feel? Do they mesh well with teammates that they've known for 5 minutes? And I think for both of these guys, they check a lot of those boxes, particularly with you know, it's funny, like, Neek is like plug and play right away. I know you're hearing the term Swiss Army knife being thrown around a lot. I was guilty of it myself. I had to go back and watch that first game because I thought Summer League head coach Depeche Mystery was like upset at him not being aggressive enough on the offensive end. And I used that as a question to Neek in that game. Like, he gets his path, he gets kind of criticized for not having strong confidence, not capitalizing, using his talents, trying to be kind of an alpha out there. And so I'm like, man, I'm seeing it in game one. Like, you weren't very aggressive. And now here's your coach saying you're not being very aggressive. And I think when I asked him the question, I kind of pissed him off. And when I followed up, I still have to put out the interview, the one-on-one I did with Neek before I left Vegas. I'll have that out probably Saturday when I get back to SAC. But one of the things that was, I brought that up. I said, I think I kind of pissed you off, and it's Dip's fault. But this is what I went back and looked at, and it really shown itself in game two against the Bulls. He's seeing Maxime Renault get off to a hot start. In the game against the Bulls, he sees Devin Carter get off to a hot start. and he's setting up his teammates. He's absolutely letting his teammates have a moment. Mm-hmm. And then getting in the second half of both of those games, Neek has some moments of himself, especially with closing out a game. And so those were really cool moments to see. I think if you've watched any of the summer league, those guys, I mean, I know Maxime sat out the game with wrist soreness, but he's so damn loud. You can hear him throughout the entire gym. He's calling out offensive sets that the other team is doing.
Yeah.
It's just, you don't see that at the summer league level at all. Mm-hmm. You rarely see it at the NBA level from veteran players, mm-hmm. but to see a guy like that come out of the second round, come out of Stanford, his smarts, his personality, his quirkiness, it's all well documented. But to see him call that stuff out to guys that he's been teammates with for 5 minutes is like, you don't see that at summer league level. So there are things to get excited about. I hope people are excited because it's been a lot of fun.
One thing that's funny about that, Sean, is one, that's the sign of a really smart basketball player who watches film. Two, it pisses the other team off. It happens probably like they'll motion to each other, but when someone yells out the play, oh, it pisses them off so much. Kara used to do that for the Sacramento Monarchs regularly, and I watched players like Cappy Pondexter, Diana Taurasi, Katie Smith just get so agitated because she's keep horns down, they're running it, and she would just yell it out, and they'd get so furious. So the fact that a rookie who's a game into his NBA career in summer league is doing that is tremendous.
Yeah, absolutely, and I can absolutely remember those moments too. And I'll share a funny story. I remember Tamika Catchings. You know, it was a lot of moments where she'd be hurt, and I was behind their bench one game. Usually, I was behind the Monarchs bench, and those very words that you're talking about from Kara and Yolanda Griffith both. This is, they know exactly, we have to mix it up. They know exactly what we're doing, mm-hmm. and getting apps, just laying into her teammates and coaches using some colorful language that I can't use at a Starbucks on the air. But it was, I totally get it. And it's funny to see the reaction to players when he's doing it, because you see their heads immediately turn violently towards him because it's so jarring to hear a guy that loud on the court. So yeah, it's fun to watch. I hope fans have been able to catch that on the broadcast. I don't know if it totally comes through, but when you're in that little Cox Pavilion at Thomas, next to Thomas and Mac, mm-hmm. it just echoes throughout the building.
One of the words that I think we've used to describe Neek the most is comfortable. He looks absolutely comfortable on a basketball floor. Maybe he's a little too passive for coaches' needs here in summer league, but we've seen other players, and we'll get to him in a minute, who don't look comfortable, whether it's with the ball in their hand, whether it's trying to execute, whether it's doing different things. Neek just looks like a basketball player to me.
100%. Plug and play. Do whatever you want him to do. I mean, he's out there doing it on both ends of the floor, which is tremendous. And look, I'm not trying to pick on Devin Carter here. He has a...
Well, you knew where I was going.
Yeah, he has a tall task. It's a nice segue because he has a tall task ahead of him. He's has to be something that he's not. And he's being asked to be that. And that could be a pathway to the NBA, at least with the Sacramento Kings. That could find him minutes. But realizing that he's just been a combo guard his whole life and not a point guard. And even talking to him and people around him, like I feel like that Moneyball quote in my mind where you have the guy trying to get accustomed to first base and he's like, it's not that hard. And it's like, yeah, it's incredibly hard. And that's essentially the same type of message that's being told to Devin. Like, no, this isn't easy for you to have to get them into sets and adapt to something you're not, but also try to hunt for your shots as well. And you're being told, you know, take shots. It can be difficult, and you kind of see him going through some of the ebbs and flows with that. For someone like Neek getting in there, his role stays the same, whether he's guarding 1-4, whether he's playing a point guard situation or getting the offense going. He knows what it's like to be a point guard. He looks so much. I know I hate comparisons at this time, but like it reminds me of like a point forward, like a Grant Hill, like a Scottie Pippen, especially for what they do defensively on the glass as well. I mean, they just fill up a stat sheet and they don't have to go out there and have these 20 point ball games to see how much they're impacting winning, impacting so many of the second chance opportunities, hockey assists, going out there, especially and just playing solid defense. And we know what they can do on the glass, him and Devin both. So he gets to do what he does. Devin's being asked to do something radically different, and you kind of see some of the ebbs and flows to that. And hopefully, you know, he's still going to continue to play in these games. A lot of guys who played last year and were high draft picks and it played a little bit in the season get to this point in summer league and they might sit out a game or two. And that doesn't seem to be the case.
Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from the Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.
Sean, I can't see his place on the team. I just can't. I can't figure it out. Yeah. Like I don't like the backup point guard thing. I don't like any sort of point guard thing for him. I think if the Kings truly need a backup point guard, they need to go sign one. Whether it's Russ, whether it's Chris Paul, Ben Simmons, Malcolm Brogdon, whether it's someone else, they need to go sign someone who plays the point guard position so we don't get 10, 15 games into the season going, well, the Kings need a backup point guard. When Dennis Schroeder leaves, everything kind of falls apart and Malik is being asked to do all of these different things, the scorer, facilitator, all of this different stuff. I just don't see it for Devin at that position, and I think they need to go address it otherwise or in another way.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's still July 18th. There's so much offseason left, but for someone like him, yeah, there might be grass greener on the other side, opportunities elsewhere, but I think if he's on your team, I don't think point guard is in his future. And I think that's not a big stretch. I think this is, if you're going to try to develop those point guard skills, it doesn't happen in one summer. It doesn't happen at one summer league. It's things that have to happen in an evolution of the position from one year to the next with playing time. So having guys like, you know, I think Malik Monk is a good example of that. I mean, he's not a point guard. Mm-hmm. But he's very much a combo guard himself. Zach LaVine, some may scoff at this, but he considers himself to be a combo guard, somebody who is capable of being able to set up the offense and be a primary ball handler in spurts. And I think those are good examples of what he can maybe be. Now, you're right, he's going to be buried in this rotation as the roster is currently situated, but how can he come in and impact winning? How can he come in and light a spark? I think it's funny because I feel where they're – I think I heard you talking the other day. You're not totally out on what this team is. Like, this is a very talented, talented team.
Yeah.
And the way the West is, you know, I'm not really looking at them as being, you know, the most competitive team necessarily from a 1-5, 1-6, or 7 standpoint. But, like, they can win games. They can be a very competitive group. And, you know, get them in a series, who knows what can happen. They didn't have a point guard last year, and I was talking to Scott Perry about that. Like, there's a genuine curiosity of what this team is capable of with a point guard in mind. They have that now with Dennis Schroeder. You've got some pieces that you've been able to add to the roster. Training camp will sort out a lot of these things. Obviously, health is paramount. But, like, you get into December, you get into January, if you can keep your head above water, maybe there's a move or two out there where you can dramatically shift your roster, and maybe that involves somebody like Devin Carter. Maybe it involves somebody like Malik Monk. But decisions will be made, and this is going to be an ongoing process for them. So they've got a few pieces that might be stopgap in the meantime, and you might have some people that are buried on the depth chart. But there's still a little bit of a roster imbalance in my mind, and I kind of side to you a little bit on this, where I'm not as discouraged as maybe a lot of people are for some of the moves that they haven't made.
Yeah.
and some of the changes that they want to see made.
Well, you again, exemplifying why you are the GOAT, you brought up Scott Perry, and I wanted to ask you about your conversation with Scott Perry. He said a couple of things that really stood out to me. One, and this is where I really commend Scott, and I don't know if he knows this, he did not use the word patience. I don't think any Sacramento Kings fan should ever be told to be patient, given what they've had to go through for the better part of the last two decades. But he did say, when you asked him, and I believe your question was, what does this team need the most? And Scott said, this team needs time together. And he said that, and I had two big takeaways. One, he's not down on this team. Maybe it's not perfect. Maybe it's not exactly what he wants. Maybe he's tried to execute a few things over the course of, you know, his first, you know, 70-something, 80-something days as the general manager that he hasn't been able to execute. But he recognizes what we were just talking about. There's talent on this basketball team here. And it's going to take time to put this team together exactly the way that he wants to. And those were the two things that stood out to me the most in your conversation with him. Was there anything in particular that stood out to you?
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that question too, because that's coming off the heels. When I spoke to him, that was after game one. And if you remember, he joined the NBA TV broadcast and he let it be known that he's still looking at point guard play. And so my very simple, basic question was, what do you need? Thinking he was going to say the same thing. And he pivoted completely different, to your point, to talk about, you know, time together. And I think that was telling, because I remember talking to agent before the season ended. And the notion of now having Zach LaVine on your team, whoever the front office may be, and in this case now it's Scott Perry, but at that time it's like looking at getting value for somebody like Zach LaVine, and the near impossible task not only of trading him, but being able to trade him to get yourself better, and reminding people that that's a multi-team trade. Like, Chicago didn't get De'Aaron Fox. Somebody else did.
Yeah.
Right? Chicago got Kevin Huerter. Are you going to say that they got better? No. They lost talent. They got better by maybe removing a awful, awful contract. And I'll be the first to admit there. And there, that signifies something different for Chicago because they're going through a rebuild. But Bulls fans who also have had to remain patient and having a lot of talent on their team and not necessarily equating the wins, like, now they're going through another rebuild. And so I have them in mind when I think of Sacramento, because they do have the likes of both DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine. And it's, I say this all the time, it sounds a little bit like a broken record, but the goal was never to trade to acquire Zach LaVine and pair DeMar DeRozan together. The goal was to get value, winning talent for De'Aaron Fox, because you essentially had a gun to your head and were making this type of trade, feeling the need that you had to do it before the season ends. I would argue otherwise. Should have probably waited to the end of the season. I say that in a long-winded way just to say that you ended up with this because based off of talent, and I think there was a desire to move off of DeRozan, realizing then the market plays itself out, and much like Zach LaVine, there's nothing in the market where you feel you can move someone of the talent of DeMar DeRozan to get better in the now. And that's what they're trying to do, is get better in the now. You can argue whether they should or they shouldn't, but this is the pieces that they have. And these two pieces with some roster behind them were able to win 50 games in Chicago. And I know people don't like to acknowledge that as a success, but it is true. I know they're longer in the tooth, but there is a belief that you can have a winning product with this. And it's not championship level, and probably can't sustain playoff success. But if you can just get into the season when teams all of a sudden in the market changes a little bit, these contracts aren't as bad, and they're both very, very movable. And you just have to make sure you get the right move as opposed to the move that doesn't make you better. So, I understand what Scott Perry is talking about. I think he knows the value, the market value of every piece on his roster. And sometimes the best moves you make are the ones you don't make.
What do you – Scott told you what he thinks this team is missing, or what this team needs specifically, time together. What do you think this team needs? You're still muted. Sorry, Sean, you're still muted.
Sorry about that. I would agree that there'd be some point guard depth that could be needed, but to me, I think a stretch four.
Yeah.
They need in the worst way. I think some wing help, some more size. Is that putting a lot of pressure on people like Drew Eubanks and Maxime Reynaud to come in here? Dario Saric, we'll see what that's like. I don't have a lot of faith there in terms of his health and his availability. It's always plagued him for so long.
Or ability.
I thought he was a solid contributor to the Warriors. You know, availability, durability, all that stuff. Like, he's a pro's pro, but he's always hurt. So I think that they need some more reliability in size. But wing is kind of where I look at the most. I think some shooting can certainly help. I don't think you need scoring necessarily, but shooting depth is something I think sorely needed. So yeah, man, it could be fun. And maybe you can answer two of those things. Like, you know, I know you mentioned Ben Simmons. I've heard that chatter I've had some people tell me that that's not likely, but a player like that that can be an elite defender and ball handler, playmaker, but also having the ability to shoot. And I just don't think Ben Simmons is necessarily a fit there. Yeah. But finding somebody like that that can come in here and add a little bit of rotation balance would be nice.
Sean, get back to camping, man, or your version, at least, of camping, and tell the old News 10 guys, Brian and Ryan and Dale, tell all those guys I said hello.
I absolutely will. Yeah, crazy times around the campfire.
You guys around the campfire is the perfect visual. It's the survival man episode of The Office. Like,
yes,
roasting s'mores. I'm all for it.
Yeah. Roasting s'mores.
Yes. Appreciate you, my friend. Thank you as always.
Anytime, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. All right. That's our man, Sean Cunningham, right there.
Hey, it's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Comedy Podcast. We've been described as unscripted, unqualified, and unapologetic. And that came from my mother. See if you agree. The Commercial Break is available Tuesday through Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.